Good evening to everybody. It is a pleasure and a joy to see everybody out. Oh, yes, those are mine. Thank you. And it's a good thing you found them. I couldn't have gone home. And I'd have had to spend the rest of the week here. My keys, for those of you that are joining us on live stream. We're finishing up on lesson two. There are some lesson twos there. There are now some lesson threes in the foyer, and there are also lesson fours. I got those. I got them finished up today, and so so if you need, I would ask that you grab a lesson four as you're leaving. For those of you that are joining us on live stream. We have all of the lessons available in PDF format that we can email to you if you'll just drop a chat to Jason and let him know that you would like a lesson. What did I say, Jason? You look alike. What can I say? James. Just send a chat message to James and he'll make sure that you get a copy of the lesson. We are in that. James, I believe we have some in the box. Well, it's not necessary. We don't have a passage we're going to yet. We will have. Who needs a binder with the lessons in it? They do not have lesson four, but those are in the foyer to add to the binder. We do have some binders here.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, we got everybody covered now? Excellent. And like I said, those of you that are joining us on live stream, if you'd like lesson, just send a message and we can get those out to you right during, as we're going during class. James is able to multitask, and so he can send that out while we're going on. Okay, we're in a study. We began the study on the struggles of the modern Christian, and our first topic was, what responsibilities do we have as a Christian? Do I have a responsibility to family, to friends, to whomever? And so what we've done is we've broken that discussion down. Last week we finished up on a discussion on application concerning, do I have a responsibility as a Christian to my friends? Now tonight, and I drew a fine line. I split a hair. Because tonight we're going to be talking about coworkers and our schoolmates, which may not necessarily be friends. It may not necessarily be friends. Yeah. Snap a little bit. Trust me, you don't want that. Yeah. Yeah, no, trust me, it's not a pretty sight. You know, country western, I'm average, but we don't want to go there. So that's going to be our discussion tonight on what responsibility do we have to coworkers, to people that we're engaged with, though they are not necessarily people that we would include into our circle of friendship. So basically what we're doing is we've got these concentric circles. We started very close with our family. Do we have a responsibility there? Yes, we do. And we talked about that. The next step then would be those that are our friends but are not necessarily family. Do we have a responsibility there? Well, yes, we do. And so that circle keeps expanding. Does this need to get moved? So then we have the next circle that we're expanding out, which is going to be people that we come into contact with, coworkers, schoolmates, whatever, though they're not necessarily within that circle of friends. And as we get into this, I'll kind of explain why I did that on the front end. It's time to start our class. We're glad everybody's here. John, can you lead us in a word of prayer? Amen. Thank you. So when you really think about the circles that we're building or drawing here, I don't know if you ever took physics. I'm sure you've all seen the dynamic where you have a puddle of water and you drop a pebble right into the center of that puddle of water. What do you get? Yeah, the ripple effect. It begins to grow. What happens when that ripple hits the perimeter of that puddle or pond or lake or whatever it might be? It bounces back. Okay? And pretty soon you've got all of these ripples going every which direction. That's basically what we're describing with this dynamic we're talking about. We picked family as our first little circle because we tend to have an affinity, a love, a great care for our family. We want to see our family have a relationship with God so that they might have salvation when the time comes. That said, that's the ripple. What's the pebble? Okay, what's causing the ripple to begin with?
The stereotypes
of Christianity. God's Word. Okay? When we take God's Word into our heart, boom, the ripple should begin to spread and goes wherever we go. Okay? And if you can picture that pebble dropping in the it's a circle that comes off of that splash. Okay? And it begins to grow out like that. So if you can picture that in your mind, you're the center. You're the pebble. The Word's working within you. And everywhere you go within your family, you contact your aunt. And maybe in your discussion with her, she begins to say, you know, that's making some sense. Now she goes out and contacts somebody else. You see that ripple's growing. And it's growing like that. That's what we're talking about. We picked family first because they typically are the ones that we have the greatest affinity for. The next group we picked were friends. Because again, that's that group of people that I've got a greater care for my friends than I might have for just the guy that I'm working in the cubicle next to. Okay? While I know him, and maybe I know a little bit about his wife and kids, because when I walked into his cubicle, he's got a picture up, and I said, "Who's that?" You know, I told Oren earlier, "Here's your sign." That's one of those "here's your sign" things. If he's got a picture of a woman and children in his office, chances are pretty good it's his wife and kids. Okay? But you ask, that might be the whole foundation of our acquaintance with this person. But do we then have a responsibility to them as a Christian? That's the topic. The first question there, question 8, is does the Bible address that kind of an area? Karen?
I brought that before, but love your neighbor as yourself, and that's everybody around us.
That's kind of all-inclusive, isn't it? That's an all-inclusive area. Irene?
Matthew 5:16 says, let your light shine before men in such a way that they may see your good works and glorify your Father.
Absolutely. Now, both of those passages have a lot of application to the next circle we're going to talk about, which is the world, right? But what about those people that we're coming in contact with, that you work with, you go to school with? Jason?
1 Thessalonians 4:11, and to aspire to live quietly and to mind your own affairs and to work with your hands who instructed you so that you may walk properly before outsiders and be dependent on them.
We are being watched every moment of every day, especially by those who maybe we have an acquaintance with. They know of our endeavor to have that righteous relationship with God. What typically are they looking for?
Mistakes.
Huh?
Mistakes.
They want to hammer you because you got angry and said a bad word, or because you were sitting in the office gossip pool and you said something about the guy that everybody's hammering, maybe the boss. Okay? And all of a sudden, you're one of them, and they're going, "I thought you said you were a Christian." And I would venture to say we've all heard that. That's our endeavor, is to let the light shine. John?
No, I think my experience was the opposite.
Good.
That when people find out that you are a Christian or a minister, then they act differently around you. You know, because they would, if they would speak with profanity, they usually try not to do it when they were in my presence.
You've been fortunate, to be very honest. I've had people who've had that response to me out on the golf course. You get joined up with somebody and they're one of these guys that every shot they have to have foul language. You know, they can't hit a good shot unless they're cussing, kind of a deal. And when they find out, they go, "Oh, okay, well, hey, I apologize. I'll try to tone it down." I've had that experience. I've also had, probably more often than not, the experience that when somebody finds out I'm a minister, that I'm trying to have this relationship with God, they go overboard to be offensive. I can't even explain that. Is their motivation to try to bring me down to their level? Or is their motivation because they have such a distaste for God and for religion that they're going to show that on every opportunity? I don't know. But I've had it both ways. And we still have a responsibility to those acquaintances, more so, I think. I mean, I guess as you get closer to the center in these circles that we're drawing, that your responsibility grows exponentially because your family really knows who you are. They know who you were growing up. They know the things that you said and did. And now that you're trying to do something different and or change, sometimes it's very difficult for them to accept change in you. And that's hard. So, yeah, we have a responsibility to these people that we have an acquaintance with. We never know what our influence is going to be on somebody. And I bring up quite often a lady that was a member here for a number of years. But for a whole lot of a number of years, she was not a member at all. She didn't go to church. But she watched the family across the street from her every Sunday, twice, get up and go to services. On Wednesdays, get up and go to services. Whenever there were special meetings, she watched them there. One day she walked across the street and she said something to Phyllis Thompson. She said, "I don't really know what you do, but I would like to." And just a few short months later, Benny Zangarelli was baptized and was a faithful member here. Some of you might have even have known her before she passed away. But that's how Benny made the decision to start looking at what God has to say. because she saw people that were nothing more than just acquaintances. They weren't friends. It's not like they ate at each other's houses. They didn't. But she saw what they were doing. And when the time came in her life that she recognized she needed to make some adjustments, she went to what she saw. We can have that influence. I tell the story about he's a relative now. My granddaughter married his son, but was a fireman. And one day one of his coworkers came in and said, "Hey, my father passed away." And of course you give your condolences and you're sorry for that. And out of the blue, he looked at Mark and said, "Would you conduct the funeral service?" Mark says, I didn't know your father. I don't even really know you other than that we work together." And the guy's response was this: "I've been watching you. When we all get together and start telling the dirty jokes, you absent yourself. When we're doing things we shouldn't, you're not there. You conduct yourself in a manner." Let me guess who that was. Okay. But you conduct yourself in a manner that says you have a relationship with God. Eric? One of the best restaurants in town.
Not when we opened it, but yeah, prior to that. Our employees saw us Sunday morning leave, Sunday evening leave. Now, maybe they were glad they saw us leave. But the fact of the matter is, we've been out of the motel for probably 8 years. One of my desk clerks called me and she said, "Eric, I'm going to be baptized. Would you baptize me?"
You don't.
And she said, "If I've ever seen a good example of a Christian family, it's yours."
Yeah.
And so you just never know.
You don't.
I'll follow that up with one more. Jack Ladd, myself, and Danny Matchnick. Yeah, I know you don't mention his name in very certain circles, but if he's listening, I'm sorry.
I would never consider to run Danny down in his hearing.
Danny's a great gospel preacher.
Yeah.
So we went to Marie Callender's for lunch, and just our meal, I said, "Hey, before our meal arrives, Danny, would you say a prayer?" And he did. 10 minutes later, a lady walks over to our table, and she said, "I couldn't help but noticing, are you men Christian?" And we said, "Yeah, we are." And she said, "My daughter has been diagnosed with cancer. It's serious. She has two kids. She's blah, blah, blah." And I think she said her name was Crystal. Because I said, "Well, what's her name?" And she said, "Crystal." And I said, "Yeah, we'll be happy to pray for it." She said, "Okay, thanks." Started walking away. I said, "Where are you going?" I said, "We said we would pray for your daughter." And we did, right then and there,
yeah.
In Marie Callender's. You just never know. But it's like what we talked about last week, Gil. If this stuff isn't in your heart already, you won't do it.
No.
It's got to be in there already.
That's,
you better be making plans to start making it.
You see, that's the key in every one of these areas. Am I prepared? Am I prepared not to take an opportunity, but to make an opportunity? Go ahead, James.
So Mike Stepney says, John 1:44-45 and following, "There is no plan laid out for congregations in the New Testament. But in John 1, we see what you were talking about. Andrew went and found Simon Peter, Nathaniel found his brother, etc. Congregations have tried numerous quote-unquote plans to teach the gospel, and they are all great efforts, but we are all supposed to work on that ripple."
That's it. We have to be ready. And what I just said was not to take an opportunity, but to make an opportunity. And that's crucial. If we wait for the opportunity to slap us in the head, you might never see one. But in every circumstance and situation, we have the ability to turn that ship to a discussion about God. May not last long. The other person may not be interested at all. But we have that ability. Aaron.
My father was a former minister for Church Christ. We had a long conversation one night. It was one of my conversations with my father that is almost preaching till midnight, to where the next morning I was like, wow, I need to face myself. And one of the conversations we had is, what's going on with the church and why are we shrinking so fast? And I said, I actually remember him preaching that he was preaching that one-third of your children won't be here. And I actually remember sitting in the pew going, it's going to be my sister for sure. It was me, right? And then it's gotten worse. And he says, because we've stopped, every time, he's one of the certain denominations, says every time they've grown, it's because they're reaching out to the community. You're not converted. You don't bring a person who's never talked about God, well, you should come to church with me. No, it's harder. You got to sit down at the kitchen table. He says his parents were converted that way. Go through the list in your head of people you know. How did they come to know the Lord? And it was over a kitchen table. This is the hard stuff. This is one-on-one. This isn't like, oh, I'm going to drag my neighbor to church with me. I mean, yeah, that's good, but laying that foundation that you're talking about is a one-on-one, uncomfortable, hard situation. And you're going to be throwing a lot of seed out there and ain't going to do nothing. It's going to be discouraging.
Yeah.
It's going to be hard. You're going to get your, literally, maybe have spit in your face. But yeah, it's tough.
So in this discussion of how we are to, or what responsibility that we have to just acquaintances, people we work with, people we go to school with. I think I've told the story. One of the biggest regrets and heartbreaks that I had was after being out of school for 15 or 20 years, my best friend in high school walked into church out at Clovis. He and his wife, Gerald and Vanessa. Unfortunately, they're separated now. But they were there. I'm standing at the back. Yeah, it's probably the ones you know. And I'm standing at the back. And as he's coming out, he says, what are you doing here? I said, I've gone to church here since the day we moved into Clovis in 1963. Verbatim quote. I didn't know that. Talk about a knife right into the brain. That wasn't his fault. That was mine. Because I never made, and mind you, we spent a lot of time together in high school. He was the head drummer in the band. I was drum major. We high jumped together. We played basketball together. Pretty much year round, we were kind of in the same group. That's on me. John.
You know, it just might be, were they an African-American couple?
Yeah.
Richardson?
Yeah.
That's my cousin.
Oh, your cousin.
Yeah.
Well, Gerald's a great guy. He was probably my best friend in high school. And, yeah, it's a small world. To my regret, when he came out to high jump, he was a baseball pitcher, hurt it, the motion hurt his back. So he came out to high jump with me. I was the number one high jumper on the team till day one that he came out. And that ended. You know, my best was like 6'2", and he was, I think he went 6'8 or 6'9 in high school. So, yeah, he was a jumper. Eric.
Should engage, if we're not walking a very thin line about one of Karen's favorite invitation songs is You Never Mentioned Him to Me. And it kind of brings it right back to the story that, you know, would you be happy in that final day to have somebody say to you, you never mentioned him to me.
Yeah.
I'm eternally lost because you never mentioned him to me. What did I think the song says? You met me in the way. So it's fascinating to us that maybe we have to get over shyness, or maybe we have to do a lot of different things to be able to accomplish this, but it goes back to preparing ourselves to do just that.
So we've kind of established we have a burden. We have an accountability, an onus in how we deal with other people. What my goal was as I prepared this, in my mind, and you know, this is one of those things, all your answers are right, but they're not my answers, so let's keep trying, you know, kind of a deal. In my mind, here's what I was thinking. How much importance do I put on my responsibility? And I'm not going to say your friends or acquaintance, your family, but on my the people that I just run into and know out there. And mind you, I have a very limited, extremely limited group of people that I'm into contact with. Okay? You're pretty much it, and your family. But for those of you that are working out there, that are dealing with people, do you really feel the burden of this responsibility? Because we need to. Because it's that important. Irene?
I think in situations that I've encountered in the workplace is making yourself different. Like you said, you know, participate in the gossip and you don't participate in the dirty jokes and you, it's your attitude that you have. It does make you stand out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Go ahead.
But it just depends on the people, and it's not something I think in situations that work now, you can't really talk about spiritual things unless you're in a closed environment.
Unless they ask you first.
Right.
And right. That's key.
And you can set up a time with them.
Sure.
But I have found people recognize that you're different.
Yeah. How many of us enjoy drawing attention to ourselves? Well, okay, but you know, there are certain people who, when they walk into a room, everybody notices them. Okay, everybody goes, oh, Gil's here, he's the one with the big mouth. Okay, I understand that. Many, just about every time I go visit a congregation where people know me, and I come in maybe a little bit late, and I'm sitting kind of in the back, and they start to sing. And Brent Woolley does this. He says, I knew you were here. Because I can be heard. I've always been one of those that I don't have a problem with that kind of standing out. It's not necessarily trying to draw attention to myself. But if people notice me for whatever the reasons, okay. I was the guy in front of the band with the big stick. Right? Never bothered me. That's not common. So if you're not like that, don't feel bad. It's not common. Most people want to blend in. I don't want to attract attention to myself. So when the group begins to engage in things, I'm going to attract attention to myself if I excuse myself from the group, so I don't. Eric?
We're all dressed up, and some lady says to Karen, oh, you're really dressed up. You look nice today. She goes, yeah, we just came from the church building. You weren't going to services? And she grabbed her husband. What'd she say to her husband? Can you believe it? These people are going to services? And I tell people that, and they go, I cannot believe you're doing it. I am shocked that you're going to services. So
yeah.
When you say create attention, yeah, you do create attention. By your deeds and your actions.
Absolutely. And we should. We actually ran into that, what was it, Monday or Tuesday when we were talking? Tuesday, when Tim was here, we're getting some new equipment for inside here for the audio. And I've known Tim McFarland for, I don't know, 20, 30 years. And a lot of you know who he is. But his response was, you're still meeting? I've had a couple phone calls. Are you guys meeting? Yeah, we are. We have to be out there. Now, Mike just sent me a message, and this is what Mike says, and this is the point that I was trying to make earlier. We have to create the opportunity. Mike says this, truly, we don't have time to wait for them to notice and get up enough nerve to talk to us. Maybe they're like us and don't want to attract attention, so they never do. That's absolutely true. I saw a hand.
Yeah, that was pretty interesting, your story about how it was, you were just dressed up for your services, and it was casual, you weren't speaking out to anybody, and part of my lack of knowledge in the Bible, but I remember my father telling me a story about this man goes to a man in a cabin and telling him about the Bible, and when he grabs water, what's preventing him from being baptized? So I feel that in Christianity, when you speak to someone, it's gracious, it's God special, but how you bring it out is very humble. Regular conversation. You don't go, hey, I'm a Christian. It's just part of a natural conversation, and that's what gives the opportunity for that person to recognize that, whether they want to spin your face or explore that with you, that's up to them, but the important thing is, as a Christian, is to keep that forefront on us.
Yeah, the real key is, I've got to kick a door open and let people, if they choose to come through, come through. But if in their perception my door is shut,
right. They're
never going to try. Mm-hmm. Jason?
Have you ever read the book Muscle and a Shovel?
Yes.
The main two characters are the Christian and the Baptist. And if you recognize they were just work acquaintances, from the Baptist viewpoint, he was a friend, but he was just a friend from work. But the responsibility that this guy put into trying to relay the gospel with him, the amount of effort he had to put in intentionality. Mm-hmm. Now it's different from person to person because everyone has different personalities. If you are working with a crew of 9 people, you can't really approach each person the same way.
No.
So your responsibility to each one is different based off how they respond. But we all need to put at least some of that effort consistently.
Yeah, I'm going to change what you said just fractionally. Our approach to each of the 9 will be different, but our responsibility is to God, is to us. And I have a responsibility to live my relationship with God in however I approach them. So we've got a couple, 3 hands. Irene first, then Eric, and who was the 3rd one? Okay, Irene, go. And after New Year's Eve, they don't go out to their trash can and see our trash can overflowing with beer bottles. Okay? They don't hear fighting and screaming and hollering coming out of the house. These things people notice because it's kind of not normal. Eric?
I don't know his name, but I can call him a young man because I know I got some age on you.
That's my son, Jaron. I'm sorry.
Nice.
My youngest son, Jaron.
Jaron. Nice to meet you. He makes a very good point, and Jesus makes this point.
Mm-hmm.
He turns to his disciples and says, "Whom do men say that I am?" Mm-hmm. Not a single one of them said Jesus, did they? Now, I would say to you this, have you ever asked your friends, "Who do you think I am?"
Mm-hmm.
It happened to me in front of Maury Estes. My best friend, we were trying to convert the gospel. And I had converted I had recommitted my life. And Maury turns to my best friend and says, "What do you think about Eric becoming a Christian or trying to walk a little bit?" And I'll never forget his words. He said, "Oh, I've seen him commit to things and I've seen him give up things." That was 35 years ago.
It's what people see, isn't it?
Exactly.
Yeah. So, and when he said, "Who do men say that I am?" Elijah, Elisha, but John the Baptist. But when he did ask, "Who do you say that I am?" Peter's response was, you are the Christ, the Son of the living God. Just for clarification purposes. So that's question 8. And we've talked about all of these things. Now, question 9. Does this change how I'm going to live my life out there? And question 9 and 10 kind of go hand in hand, though 10 is the segue into the next section. How will this discussion that we've just had, how will it change what I'm doing out with my work compadres, my schoolmates? I guarantee you, if I could go back and change, Gerald would have been one of the first ones that I'd have been talking to and inviting to come to church with me. And I never did. That's all me. And that's a regret that I have to live and go through. And by the way, if you see him or talk to him, tell him Gil said hi. Only he'll probably know me as Richard. That's what I went by in high school. Jason?
Richard.
I
was listening to a podcast, I think it was yesterday, and this guy said, he gave this story how he went to throw away his trash, and they have a recycle, or they have two trash cans, whatever. And he notices when he throws it in the trash can, it doesn't have a bag. And he said that he could very well have just walked away and not done anything with it. It's just a trash can, right? And he said, okay, well, I'll take it, put it in the next trash can, because it had a line for it. So he did it, and he's like, you know what? I could still do one more thing. So he goes and he puts the trash bag in the trash can. The most mundane thing doesn't make a huge difference in the grand scheme of things, but he said he walked away from that because he became the kind of person who puts the trash bag in the trash can.
Yeah.
And it's those simple, basic things where when you see it and you know something should be done and you can do it, you do it.
For him who knoweth to do good and doeth it not.
Yes.
Right?
So that rings so clear to me. Karen and I live in Monterey. I have a kid who's a friend of a co-worker of mine, and he was elderly. And I found out that he had cancer, and he was in the hospital. And I went up there, took my Bible with me. I was all ready to preach the gospel to him. And he knew what I was all about. I walked in the room, and there were about nine other of his friends in there. And everybody was laughing and joking, and he was just spry as could be. And I said, he can wait another day. He died that night.
Mm-hmm.
So that means a lot to me when it says, for him to know to do good and do it if it not. And I thought to myself, wow, I missed that opportunity to deliver the gospel.
Yeah. So what do you see as being the thing that we have to change the most?
Ourselves.
Our hearts, our attitudes, the mindset that says, he's kicked that door open, I'm going to walk through it. On the golf course, one of the things that I do, somebody hits a bad shot and, pardon me, not trying to be sacrilegious, but their comment will be Jesus H. Christ. And I'll be standing there and I'll say, no, I'm not. But I'm one of the heirs with him, and I'd be happy to tell you about it. And you know what's funny? Whether they give me the opportunity to talk or not, they quit saying it. Okay?
That you don't believe that's who that is. So what does that even mean to you?
Yeah.
So I don't like it. Something in my youth I've struggled with is saying that, right?
Yeah.
And then as growing as a Christian, coming up with more words, but listening to somebody say that and they're like, do you even believe that there is such a thing? And if they say no, I say, well, you have to take that out of your vocabulary.
Yeah, what are you using it for? So this question 10, how should this attitude change how we deal with our acquaintances, coworkers, schoolmates, whomever? What should be our focus? John.
If we're like Christ, he didn't make, really overt attempts, but he was just somebody who would engage in conversation. Like with Zacchaeus, all he said is, I see you up there, you're coming to my house.
Mm-hmm.
So he gave him an invitation. Mm-hmm. Or the woman at the well, He just started a regular conversation.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like Eric's example. I mean, I don't know if they had their Bibles with them or not when they walked into the restaurant, but it's not that you have to do something that is, you know, otherworldly, other than just be neighborly, be nice, be willing to talk.
Exactly. Yeah.
And I think a lot of times we hide it under a bushel.
You're going to laugh. I've got a recording in the truck of the Oak Ridge Boys doing This Little Light of Mine. And it's a great rendition. If you ever wanted to listen to it, I'll let you hear it. Jaron, you had a hand.
Yeah, I completely with what the gentleman over there said about, as Jesus do, act neighborly. Jesus acting indifferent with his prospects with the tax collector in terms of his generosity and his engaging conversation. And I believe the issue with the co-workers like schoolmates is really the environment and what implies of that environment. With family and friends, we're family and friends regardless, or even so, because of Christianity, or regardless of it, it doesn't affect that. But in a school or work environment, then the game changes if you're dealing with people you don't really know well, mm-hmm. and that can be fearful. Because you don't know how you're going to be judged or stereotyped as we reviewed a couple weeks back.
And yeah, so what's interesting is how the law reads is you are not allowed to push it out there. But somebody says, hey, how are you doing? Hey, God's blessed me. Mm-hmm. And 9 times out of 10, you're going to get a response back. Well, I understand that. He's blessed me too. You know, that's great. Could we find an opportunity to sit and talk about that?
What'd you do this weekend?
Yeah. Can we find an opportunity to sit and talk about it? So you're not pushing it out there. You're not violating the law. You're not taking either work time nor school time. My son-in-law has been a school teacher for going on 30 years now. For the last 10 or 15 years, there are a group of teachers, and it has grown every year, that meet him like at 7 in the morning on a Thursday or something like that. Have a class. You never know. You just never know. And it's not really a class where he's trying to teach the gospel. They open up the Bible and they talk about the scriptures. And because you have different core beliefs that are sitting there, you get a lot of different discussion. But what's interesting is some of those whose core beliefs were vastly different when they started are now starting to come closer to alignment. And you know what? You just never know. I saw a hand, Jason.
I've realized that people couldn't care less that you are a Christian. Mm. You say that they're Christian, they're not surprised. They don't like, oh, you're a Christian. You tell them you're a Christian, and it's a good segue, right? But they don't care about what you say you are. They care about
what you do.
And it's kind of evident. Going through learning the process of being in the union, they have people they call rats, people who tell on other people for doing stuff they shouldn't.
Yeah.
And whether or not tattletale is something that you think you should be, there's such a hard-toed line. Like, this is acceptable behavior and this is not. And a lot of times what you should do falls on the side of not acceptable in their eyes. So it's not this idea that you're saying you're a Christian so you're ostracized. It's you're doing what they're not. And whether or not they think that you're trying to be more righteous or because they think you're better than them or maybe because they at one point wish they could have done that themselves.
Yeah.
But it's that divided line, doing right versus wrong.
We all have to make the decision in the summation of this section. Step one. We've got to make sure that God's Word is abiding within us, that we are studying it, we know what it says, so that we can be prepared for every encounter or situation or circumstance that we come up against, that we can hear if a coworker or a schoolmate says something that might kick open a door. But we got to be prepared. If we're not prepared, as Eric said early on, and this goes all the way through all of these, if I'm not ready to tell somebody else about God, then that's my fault. And I will stand accountable for that. Because I missed an opportunity, and hopefully it's not the opportunity that might have led somebody to Christ. You never mentioned him to me. We don't want to do that. So in summation, we need to be prepared, and we need to be ready to kick a door open, even when maybe somebody on the other side has a foot against it. Last comment, Jan.
Yeah, I just want to make some simplify. Part of it's too simplify, oversimplify, but it's really the role of the Christian in this sense is to keep that door open or kick the door out anytime, with anyone, anywhere.
Exactly.
If it's family, place, if they are a little bit of a religion and you want to do that jump and push.
So next week we're going to be talking about what is our responsibility to people we don't know. That's who I'm intending to say by the world. So take some look into the scriptures. See what you can find. And hopefully we'll get that section finished. And then we'll be moving on into lesson three. As I said, lesson three is out there. They're sitting on the back on the handrail right now. But lesson four is out there. So please pick up lesson four. So that you can stay ahead. Thank you all for your attendance and discussion, and thank you for live streaming.